Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, we're continuing with our series of introducing you to music you might think you aren't interested in, but maybe you are. Dance music or club music is full of heavy bass lines, strong beats, and the incorporation of early electronic instruments like the synthesizer. It's made largely for nightclubs, raves, and festivals. Sounds like something you'd enjoy. Well, to talk us through it is DJ and presenter of 2FM, Jenny Green. Jenny, thanks so much for coming into us. So where did dance rave, where did it all begin?
Well, depending who you talk to, you'll probably hear different variations. I mean, certainly over in the States, the early days of disco and everything like that. But I think you have to look at maybe Detroit and what was the early days of techno. And I know that word to a lot of people sounds a lot heavier than it is, and it kind of is now. But back in those days, the likes of Derek May and Juan Atkins and Kevin Saunderson, and they were all high school friends, but they sort of, I would say Derek May particularly, would have been one of the instigators of the techno scene over there. And then that kind of travelled to the UK and it travelled to Ireland. And I think the big song really, and that would have been in the late 80s, but the big song that he did that people would know is Strings of Life. And I think it's been remixed, it's been sampled so many times since then. And I think it's the big hit. And he made it with a friend of his. And it was interesting because the sample that's actually in it was like originally a piano ballad, and then he ran it through a sequencer, and then the result is the big tune that we know.
All right, back from 1987. Here we go. Okay, so that's Strings of Life. So was that the genesis of it kind of getting us interested in it here?
I think it was. I mean, if you remember back watching, certainly in the 80s, the likes of Top of the Pops, and when those kind of tracks started to appear on Top of the Pops and people were like, what is this? And I think it became huge in the UK. And then, as you know yourself, everything that kind of became big over there made its way over here to us as well. And I think the big rise of it here would have been back in 1995. And there's probably people listening now who remember this event. Unfortunately, at the time I was too young to go to it. I didn't go. My sister went, and it was Dance Nation that ran in the Point, and Mr. Spring and Mark Kavanagh and all of these acts that performed. And it was kind of one of these crazy events, and it was put together by Red Records and Springer and all these people. And it was kind of the beginning, I suppose, of this massive movement in the country. I mean, I don't know if you went to it yourself, did you?
No, I didn't go down, but I was at the very first concert ever in the Point Depot.
Who was that?
It was back in the late 80s, and it was Huey Lewis and the News.
Wow.
So I'm giving away. And I was at the very last event there, which was Bernard Dunn's Fight, but the less said about that one, the better. And I had the two tickets and I've lost them all. They go for some money now. But you talked there about DJ Mr. Spring and Mark Kavanagh. So it was Sixth Season was a huge hit. I think we can play a little bit of that now. Such a familiar sound there, such a familiar tune.
Your face lit up as soon as it started.
It did. Well, I can't believe that there's anybody listening to us now, whether they're in their kitchen or whatever, that's not tapping their foot to that, no matter what age they are. What do you say to people that say, I absolutely detest that, I don't like that sort of music?
I don't believe them. That's what I'm saying anyway. I think when you hear something like that, the best thing about that track for me is actually how it was made when you hear it.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Spring obviously made that track himself. He recorded at home in his studio, and he initially wanted to record it with an orchestra, but he didn't have that at his disposal. So he went out, there's a kind of a courtyard outside of his house. He recorded a dog barking, and then he got some milk bottles bottles and lined them up and blew into them, and then obviously took all the samples of that and layered them, which is the result of the sound that you have now. And you would never think that that was coming from milk bottles.
That's brilliant. You know, innovation, obviously. And, yeah. And so there was more technology coming about then, allowing, as you said, the layering, we'd say, on computers and so on, rather than mixing it on a desk as such. So where do we go from there? That we're talking about the mid-90s now, nightclubs, fancy nightclubs around town and all of that. Where do we go from that part of, I suppose, the history of it in the mid-90s?
In the mid-90s, I mean, and it's sad even talking about them now, these incredible nightclubs. We had such an amazing scene here. Mm. I think, sadly, it all sort of went away when late bars and, you know, chart music and all of these things got introduced. But if you look back to the early days of, like, the System, you know, Ormond, Sir Henry's down in Cork.
The Pod,
Red Box, all of that. And we had such an incredible scene and so many big international DJs and acts who would travel over and play in these venues. And it seemed to be a real movement, and it was just, everything was really taking off and going so well. And for such a small country, we had a massive influence, I think, on dance music, you know, certainly across Europe.
Well, who was the target audience at that stage, Jenny? You talk about these nightclubs, which, you know, mere immortals would never dream of being able to get into. It was almost a sort of celebrity sort of places we thought that you know you had to be a member to get into. Was that who was the target audience for a lot of this music at that time in Ireland anyway?
I think the target audience was kind of everybody, because, you know, it was the early days of it, but it was becoming more mainstream. So you were looking at just, you know, young people who were working, people who were in college, sort of, you know, the tail end of secondary school, and possibly some older people as well. But it didn't discriminate. Once people went through those doors, everybody was kind of the same.
Yeah, and up until that point, musicians made music, but then it became a point where DJs were now becoming top of the charts.
They were, I think. You know, there are more people who are DJing now are producing and making music. It's kind of nearly, you sort of have to in order to get on. But the early days, you know, there was a lot of DJs who weren't making the music quite so much, but were absolutely massive, had a huge following, certainly in Ireland. But I think, like anything, you know, these things progress and they move on. And certainly that feeling that was in the club was then being heard on the radio.
And the one that I suppose really sticks out, if we thought that Sixth Sense was familiar to our ears, Robert Miles became a household name nearly in music, or certainly on the radio anyway, back in the early noughties.
Yeah, he really did. I think it was, you know, in the 90s, he was obviously Italian. He was a composer. I don't think he was DJing or doing anything necessarily in that scene. And he had recorded Children. And I think, and I could be mistaken, I think it was one of the DJs, I think Joe T. Vanelli, had taken the track over to Miami. And then suddenly this song exploded worldwide, and no more so than it did here.
And I think, Jenny, that became the bridge from specialist to mainstream, really.
Yeah, I think it did. And when you look at, you know, dance music is one thing. It's the one type of music that I think most people like. And the reason for that is that, you know, back in the 90s, that was the music that you heard on the radio. That wasn't on specialist shows. That was kind of chart music, I suppose, for want of a better word. And I think that's why, whether it's young people now, it's middle-aged, it's older, everybody knows these songs, and you don't have to be a big dance fan to enjoy them and to go to venues to hear them.
Yeah, and I don't think there was a radio package that was made back then that didn't have that as a bed underneath it, or a sports package. Will you tell me about SPQR and the Italian connection there?
Yeah, this is a fascinating one because a lot of people will know this track. They may get the name of it wrong, but it's by SPQR. The song itself is called Hypnotic State, but it's from the Unlimited Dreams EP. Now, it first came out back in 1993. It was done by an Italian producer. But the interesting thing about this is a friend of mine a number of years ago was looking to license it to put it onto a dance compilation album. And it turned out that nobody could find any details for who had made it. It wasn't a hit anywhere apart from here. And it was particularly a hit in Dublin. It took longer for it to filter through. But this one song that only ever came out on vinyl that nobody's really been able to track down the owner of. So a bank account has been set up over in Italy for people. If they are using it on something, they've kind of put a fee in there. If it's never been claimed. And the SPQR letters are actually from the manholes in the town. In wow. Italy. And I don't know if it's a searching for Sugar Man situation. This guy will find out eventually.
Such a familiar piece of music, and it's remarkable that nobody knows who made it.
No, yeah. Well, they haven't claimed credit anyway as of yet. They might after now.
Yeah. What about the scene now? Obviously, we've had COVID and all of that, but you know, in the night in the night scene, is it still very much? Is it the main part, I suppose, of nightlife?
Yeah, I mean, it is. Obviously, nightlife has taken a hit. Pre-COVID, it was taking a bad hit anyway. And I think, you know, certainly what's happened over the last year hasn't helped the situation. The only thing that we do hope is that maybe when we get back to venues and clubs properly, fully, with no restrictions, that it might see a resurgence in the movement because everybody has just been living for this for so long. So the hope is that it will come back even bigger than it was.
Well, I mentioned earlier on, I've been at Huey Lewis and the news. And I was also in the Tree Arena in 2017 when you collaborated with the RT Concert Orchestra. That was an amazing concert. Just shows the brand, the sort of breadth of music that I'm interested in. That was absolutely fabulous. Are you going to collaborate with them again?
Yeah, obviously we were meant to be playing the Marquee in Cork and the Ivy Gardens and all those gigs, and they were moved, you know, to this year, and now that's been moved again to the following year. But I think the beauty of that collaboration is that dance music and classical music are the two types that are euphoric and they lift people, and I think that's why as a combination it works so well.
Right, and this is one piece of music that certainly reminds us of that night, and very much I suppose is almost the signature dish of the collaboration between Jenny Green and the RT Concert Orchestra. Jenny, great to chat to you. Enjoy the sunshine out there and keep up the great work over there on 2FM. So here we are with Insomnia.
Fundamental movement. So when it's black, this insomniac, take an original tack, keep the beast in my nature under ceaseless attack. I get no sleep. I can't get no sleep.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.